Alrighty, well, welcome to the June Mike and Scotty Live. We're building a file as usual, which is always a good sign.
Yeah, that's the first sign that things are going right.
See, that's what accounts for that pregnant pause at the beginning, but because until I see that, I'm not even sure anything is working. This is folks, this is a function of the fact that every time you call up Skype, it's something new.
Right. You just can't. We were talking about this earlier because Mike made the mistake of downloading the latest version of Skype.
He gave me no
And
choice. He gave me no choice this time.
yeah, I haven't had to do that yet, for reasons we'll discuss later, I'm going to never do it. We're functioning, and that's really all that counts at this point.
So you're suggesting that there's something coming up later on in the show that people are going to want to be sure that they stay tuned all the way through for.
Yeah, folks, listen to the end instead of, just the first 30 seconds and then, pretend you listen to the whole thing.
And then tell us what you think.
Your feedback would be much appreciated.
Really?
So hang in there, folks, and we promise not to bore you to tears in between. So
We promise it'll be worth the wait.
right. Hey, Mike, the first thing on our agenda, as it is always on this podcast every year, is a review of the New England Railroad Prototype Modelers Meet, which took place a couple of weeks ago and down in Connecticut. And you were there, and unfortunately, I wasn't, despite my best intentions. But give us some of your impressions.
There was a rumor that Scotty Mason was going to attend, and I mentioned
Yeah.
that to a lot of people down there and got the benefit of a lot of raised eyebrows.
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint, but I know it's not a new thing either. So, unfortunately, work almost always gets in the way of that sort of thing.
Sure. Well, this was the first time they had it in this new location in Farmington, and where was it? It was at a Marriott, I think, right? Yeah, the Marriott Farmington, and it was a bigger venue, which I think was in part what was driving it, because I think they felt like they were outgrowing the other place in Enfield anyway, and that place was getting remodeled. So they had to scramble to find a new place, and I think they stumbled onto actually a pretty nice hotel. The guest rooms were great. The model room was a good size. The clinic rooms were a little small, so they're going to be making some changes next year to address that. Largest attendance ever for these guys, 320, which is amazing.
So, not only the attendance number is great, but just the longevity of this show, this convention,
18 years.
is impressive. We congratulate Dave and his crew. It's interesting, you hit a nerve when you mentioned the size of the clinic rooms being a little small. That's always when you're working with a hotel, that's always a bugaboo. And
Well, you can either have too few that are large,
yeah.
or the right number that are too small, because basically they have X amount of space, and then they sort of, divide them or open them up as they see fit. But I think they've got a solution worked out for next year with the hotel, so I'll be anxious to see that. But no, it was a nice place, and it was a nice area, and plenty of places to go get victuals and bond with people over dinner. So, all in all, I think it was just another great event, usual great clinics, and I did try to spend some time in the model room. I found a couple of detail parts that are long out of production that I was delighted to find. It's a headlight assembly that I need for my D&H loco. So I found a couple of those, and they have a good white elephant table there, and I sold like 150 bucks worth of stuff, and just, amazing, really. It happens every year. It's one of the more popular things in that vendor area is the ability for people to just come and do it. And John Sacerdoti runs the whole thing very efficiently and like clockwork. It's a nice fringe benefit.
So tell us, you teed up your clinic a little bit last month, but you didn't dive real deep into it, and certainly would like some feedback in terms of response from the attendees. But talk a little bit about your clinic and how it went over.
Well, you know, anytime you do a new clinic for the first time, even though you just did it, you don't know how it's going to be. And if I'm doing two or three meets in a given year, the clinic that I give tends to be the same clinic, maybe a little bit of additions and subtractions based on what I might have done in between. But you know, for example, if this had been a year where I had done the Valley Forge meet, I would have given largely the same clinic in New England, and I would have had the benefit in New England of knowing how it went, you know, in Valley Forge. So this one was based on basically everything that I'm doing this year, and it covered the final op session in on January 5th, and starting the evening of January 5th to move the staging and yard out, and you know, all of the pictures and effort associated with that. I talked about my gate and all of that stuff that you've seen in person. And honestly, when I got to the end of my clinic, I thought, I'll bet that sucked. Because I realized that it's very difficult to convey the complexity and the interest that I have in solving some of these issues visually in a clinic format. I think people are it's easy for them to warm up to something more visually interesting involving scenery or weathering techniques or whatever. So we'll see. I mean, I had good questions afterwards, and several people, you know, asked me all kinds of questions and all of that, but I got to be honest, I didn't think it was the best clinic that I ever did. And if I were to do it again, I think I might have presented it a little bit differently. But, you know, that's just how it hit me. Bear in mind that after I do any clinic, at some point afterwards, I'll talk to somebody I know and say, "Did that make any sense at all?" Because it's really hard to tell while you're in the middle of it, you know.
It's interesting. I doubt it went over poorly because you're just too good a presenter. But it's interesting that you get in your head, and I've been the same way that this is a great idea, and this is how I want to present it. And maybe the tendency is not to look at the big picture.
Well, it's very difficult to look at it from the perspective of someone who just doesn't know what you know and is not as invested as you are. Now, this is actually really current events for me because this week I had a lot of interaction and back and forth with Joe Fugate at Model Railroad Hobbyist because my column is coming out in about 10 days in the new issue. It'll be in the running extra section. It's only $2, folks, and I'm telling you, it's worth it. It's probably the best bargain out there for a model railroad publication. But my article or my column was along the same lines as the clinic, except that with the article, of course, you have to do good captions and things. Because you doesn't have the benefit of you standing there explaining it and answering questions that people might have. So at least the article had the benefit of me having already done the clinic, and I was able to put some extra effort into some explanations that, you know, in retrospect in the clinic, I think I might have not done as well as I would have liked. So Joe and I had some very, very effective and collaborative back and forth, and he was explaining to me how, particularly when they get it laid out like that. In other words, this is something that you have more of an ability to do once the article gets laid out in the format that it's going to exist in. You can kind of see how it's going to flow, and then you have the opportunity to address what he calls breadcrumbs, so that if you're going from one photo to the next or referring back to a photo, that the reader has a really easy path to do that, you know? So I think the article is going to benefit greatly from that interaction that I had with him this week. And I think the article is probably going to do a better job of explaining what I was talking about than I did in my clinic.
Okay. Well, I've sat through a number of your clinics, and I found them always to be entertaining and informative, and I've never ever walked out without learning something new. But maybe you're right in that you're doing things in a very detailed, thoughtful, project management style way. And even though ostensibly these are all prototype modelers, I wonder, who among them has your level of discipline or even, thinks in detail to the degree that you do.
Yeah, and how many people are doing the kind of crazy scope project that I'm involved in right now? You know, I mean, I don't think it's a typical thing to do. You know, not many people add onto their house to add onto their layout, but this probably is a good segue into the layout update because, I think the last time we were all talking, I was talking about how the benchwork phase was, a very high percentage of completion and had gone just astonishingly fast. And now I was kind of getting into the teeth of the grade and having to deal with some much more complex design issues and track laying itself, which you really can't rush. You know, I think we talked about the fact that you can get really good at certain scenery techniques or carpentry techniques or whatever, but you just can't rush track laying. It takes what it takes to do it right, and there's a lot of track to lay. I've been going through boxes of track and, cases of turnouts and cork roadbed like you can't imagine. I mean, just, wholesale. But it's nice having all of this stuff here and in stock because it means that there's no obstacle. As long as I have the time and I have the inclination, progress can happen. And I
Did
got.
you? I
Go ahead.
oh, I know you've been squirreling away track for a couple of years,
That's right.
but was it based on any estimate beforehand, or did you just kind of think, well, at a minimum, I'm going to need this?
Well, the flex track, I tried to get that. I tried to make sure that I had more than enough than I thought I would need. And as far as the turnouts went, I wasn't thinking that I could be that specific about whether or not I was putting in a number 8 or a number 6 turnout, or in some cases even a left or a right, because sometimes as you get putting the track in, you realize that how you thought you were going to do it is actually just the opposite based on how it wants to flow. So all I did was make sure that I had what I thought was a good quantity of number 6 lefts and rights, number 8 lefts and rights, curved number 7 left and right, and even a smattering of number 5s for industrial areas, And as I've gotten into this, what surprised me so far is that I'm using way more number 8s than I thought I would use, and conversely, way fewer number 6s than I thought I would use. Had the curves pretty right, but I just ordered some more number 8s, both lefts and rights, because I think with the space that I have to work with here, I've just got the opportunity to use some larger turnouts than I was accustomed to using in the previous in iterations of the layout. So that's been like an interesting development. I did right before the New England meet get a little bit of a spring bug, and I was down for a couple of weeks really, and ended up taking about 3 weeks off from layout construction, and I hadn't done that all year, so it was in a way kind of nice to walk away from it and sort of reset mentally. And I was getting into doing a couple of very complicated areas anyway. So I was able to come back to that with a really like a clean approach. And my buddy Dave, who helps me with a lot of this stuff, he's now retired, so he's available and here a lot. I got to give him props on this because he has just been really engaged and dialed in on this thing. And it's been a tremendous help to be able to brainstorm some of this stuff with him. You know what I mean? So the whole process is just more efficient and more productive and more rewarding, really, because it's not just you scratching your head by yourself in your basement. You know, it's more collaborative kind of effort. And my original plan was to try to get the layout running as soon as possible, and even thought that could happen as early as this month. And had I approached that from a Manhattan Project standpoint, and had been willing to do some temporary stuff, I could have made it, but I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much, and I think I would have not enjoyed going back and tearing out some stuff that I put in order to redo some scenes that who knows when I would have gotten around to doing because of that.
Yes, but you would have got to work with Enrico Fermi and Edward Teslar. I mean, how cool would that have been?
Well, that would have been cool. But I decided to slow it down a little bit to make sure I'm enjoying the process, to not worry so much about the "so when are we going to operate" standpoint. And I ended up deciding that it would just be dumb to not build these two complicated scenes as part of getting the main line operational and reconnected again. I think it was really, in retrospect, the right thing to do. And what it has morphed into is one of the most interesting things I've ever done in model railroading. I'm just enjoying the hell out of it. It's just intensely interesting to figure this out. And I spent, for example, this week 2 full days designing a bridge. And the whole first day, I just got nowhere with it. I kept trying to get it and trying to get it and just got nowhere. And I'm looking at studying photos and looking at what was available to me from a kitbashing standpoint, or trying to use what I had on hand, and just wasn't happening. And a non-railroading buddy of mine stopped by yesterday on our way out to dinner with the guys, and I started explaining to him what the dilemma was, and he started looking at the pictures, and next thing you know, we're working interactively on it. And wouldn't you know, by the time we were done with that discussion, I had like a whole different way of looking at it. And when I got back from dinner, I went down there for a couple hours and had the whole thing designed full scale and drawn up as a template ready to build. So you just never know how it's going to go when it comes to things like that. But these sort of pleasant surprises and interesting challenges are what I enjoy a lot about the hobby. In fact, these scenes will actually have to have some scenery done at the time of building them, largely because it would just be dumb not to. The build order on this has been very challenging and very interesting, and it's kind of like critical when it's really complicated to get that right.
I want to go back to your comments about the number 6 and number 8 turnouts. It's interesting to note that, when we were much younger, commercially available number 8 turnouts were pretty rare.
Oh yeah, I mean, we were using number fours.
And the gold standard was, always use 6, if you can, and avoid using 4s if you can. And
Sure.
I built layouts at the time thinking, I'm chewing up a lot of extra real estate, by using number 6 turnouts. You're going through it now. 10 years ago, when I was building my layout, I had the same experience. I had stockpiled turnouts, and had some thoughts where I was going to want and need number eights, and ended up using about twice as many. And what I found, and I'm sure this is part of your thought process as well, is that even though they take up almost twice as much space as a number six turnout, operationally and appearance wise, they're 10 times better. And for me, operating steam locomotives, on a main line, they're almost essential.
Well, for steam, I would agree. I have to say that we've had zero issues with the number sixes here, but from a flow standpoint, from a how does it look standpoint, you can't beat the eights. And there's a big section of double track main that comes from where you pop out of the hidden trackage over to the right of Mahoopany, all the way around where Pittston Yard used to be, and then all the way down the whole front length of the addition to Pittston Junction, and even the length of Pittston Yard. That's all double track Lehigh line. And I didn't really have anything prior to this remotely resembling that. So when you have that length of double track main, you're going to have some crossovers, and it's the crossovers in particular that look right as number eights.
It's appearance wise, and as a prototype modeler, right?
Right.
I mean, it's certainly closer to the standard that the prototype uses.
Well, if you've been doing it long enough, you probably have a good sense of what looks right, and that's kind of what I've been doing with this triple crossing that I'm building. And just to review, it's one of the two tracks of the Conrail main that runs on a bridge that's longitudinal, so the stream can run underneath the track lengthwise, the width of an abutment. That's the best way I can describe it. It's so cool. I can't believe I get to build this. You know what I mean? When I saw it in person, I said, oh, okay, that I gotta build, And then on top of that is double track D&H crossing of that area, with one of the through girder bridges being abandoned. So it's just a single track, but it's a double track bridge. And then above all of that, this soaring through truss road bridge, which is going to be that Pennsylvania green, that really dominates the scene. And you've got all of these abutments to be concerned with. And of course, where's the road going to go? And what does the scenic backdrop look like there? And what is the hillside? So it's just been a really, really fun scene to interact with. And I think it's going to be very cool, actually.
Well, the fact that it existed prototypically just blows my mind, because to see the pictures of it is just and I forget which magazine it was, right? But there was a in the the back part of one of the hobby magazines several years ago, there was a piece every month that was basically, I'm paraphrasing, but there's a prototype for everything.
Sure, I remember that. I forget what that my magazine that was, but I remember that piece.
And turnouts on trestles, and things like the S curves on bridges, and just crazy stuff. And this would definitely, absolutely fall under that particular feature. It's just so strange to look at.
Well,
And
there's a turnout on the bridge at Pittston Junction. I was having trouble laying that out when I was doing the planning, and I'm thinking, how the heck did they do this? And I went to Google Earth and I started looking at it, and then I kind of zoomed in on it and I thought, you got to be kidding me. There's a turnout on the bridge.
you're moving right along.
Absolutely. And for anybody that says to me, so when are you going to operate again? I think rather than approaching it from the project manager standpoint of it's going to be right around here if I'm going to get this and this, and I'm not doing that now. I mean, I've been doing that for a year and a half. I'm approaching it from a sometime in the fall probably standpoint, but it's going to be when I'm done.
Well, I mean, this is probably, you've probably only got five or six more big projects in you like this. So I'm sure you want to enjoy this, while it lasts before next spring hits and you're knee deep in another one.
Well, maybe, and one of the, I mean, yeah, you're trying to be facetious there, but honestly, part of the impetus to get all of this hard work done now is that it doesn't get any easier as you get older, right?
No.
And I want to also be young enough to enjoy the fruits of all of that for as long as possible, right? So, there's some truth to that, And in fact, it's been so long now since I've done scenery that I may actually refocus my efforts on Ransom. Remember that?
Sure. Which leads us into a segue.
Well, Ransom, if anybody remembers, that was a that's a big paper mill that is not too far north of Pittston Yard, and in fact, it's so close to Pittston Yard that the Pittston switcher is oftentimes, at least in my era, was tasked with going up there and doing some switching for them. Sometimes it was also done by the train that was going to Mehoopany, but. It's an interesting paper mill with a building on each side of the tracks and an overhead bridge connecting them, a pipe bridge. And it's of brick construction and needs a lot of windows. So, over a year ago, was it 2 years ago? I don't really remember. I think it might have been about a year and a half ago now that I think about
Yeah,
it.
yeah.
I was whining about, having to cut all those window openings out. And you and I started talking about laser cutting it, with you doing the laser cutting with your laser. And we had a specific window before my project of building the addition started that I thought, well, if we can get it done quickly, I can actually work on this during this couple of 3 months stretch here, and this might be a nice way to do it. As it went, it took us longer than I thought, I guess, to do the get the drawings right, and then you ran into some challenges trying to burn it, and then the addition started, and that was that, So the whole project had just kind of sat there. And the funny thing is, not long ago, I just thought, geez, I wonder if Jimmy Simmons could be persuaded to consider cutting this. I wonder if he still has his machine. I wonder if he's even willing to consider it. So I mentioned it to you, and you said, "You know what? Ask him. What could go wrong?" And to my surprise, he said, "Send me the drawing." So I had you resend me the CAD file, and I sent it to him, and he was able to read it. And he spent 1 weekend just kind of, he said, laying it out and trying to get all the corners to match right and all of that. I mean, he's got a plan, I guess, for it. He understands what has to be done. And he had started to burn it last weekend. Then his family surprised him with some Father's Day thing. I mean, you'd think people would have their priorities straight.
Yeah, what the heck is that?
I don't know, but he has promised me he'll get back to it this coming weekend, and I'm optimistic that he will. And by this time next week, I might even be looking at it, which will be amazing because if that thing comes in with the openings right and the windows just fit right in, I think I can knock that thing together in no time. And really, if you have the building together in that spot, that scene I think is going to scenic itself. I really think I'll be very motivated to just kind of get another finished looking section of layout in between, the endless task of laying track and building bridges and all that kind of thing. It'd be nice to be a little bit more diverse. Mike Confalone keeps joking about it. He says, like, I'll tell him that, and he'll say, yeah, well, tell me when you're ready to, weather a car or something. Then I'll know you're all the way back. But I will say, I got my blasting booth working again. I've got the foot switch on it now to control the air, and I've got the exhaust connected to the shop's central vac system, and I mounted the gun to the front of the booth with a tie wrap holding the trigger open. So instead of having to deal with this bulky gun and bulky gloves and a stiff hose that goes to it and all of that, now I just step on the pedal and I've got both hands to move the model around inside the booth, which is a very clear view now instead of being sort of cloudy from the dust because the exhaust is right. So it was like a pleasure to blast something. So I thought, all right, let me blast off these gondolas that I've had sitting here for years. They're going to be D&H gondolas. And then I thought, well, that went swimmingly. Let's paint something. I hadn't used the paint booth in the new model room yet. So I sat down there and broke out the Iwata, and the exhaust on the new booth now is much better because it's like an 8-inch pipe going straight out instead of a, an 8-foot dryer hose. And it was just like a pleasure to paint. And then I thought, yeah, that's why I did all of this stuff.
Well, it's good that you're settling in, and it's good that you're able to look beyond, I guess, the sawdust creating construction. It feels like it's gone by fast, but again, I haven't been doing the work, so of course it's going to seem faster to those of us that haven't rolled up their sleeves.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that I'm very satisfied with the amount of things that have gotten done so far this year on the layout. I think it may have exceeded my expectations a little bit. And again, I'm not aiming for production, but productivity. You want to be doing stuff, enjoying the process of doing it, moving forward towards where you want to be with it. I think once I'm operating again, I can dial my pace down to whatever the heck I feel like, and that's going to be what it is.
And then before you know it, spring will be here and you can build another addition and start all over again.
Well, we know that's not happening, don't
Well,
we?
I agree that you probably won't be building an addition, but I've known you long enough and too well to know that the likelihood that there won't be some future renovation somewhere on that layout
Well,
won't take
Ray
place.
Schofield keeps kidding me and saying, "I know you've got a few more layout kabooms in you, Mike." And I keep telling him, "Ray, not happening."
No.
The inclination to blow up something that I already did. I mean, the reason I blew up those areas was I wasn't happy with them. And all of the areas now that are sort of semi done on the layout, I'm completely happy with all those areas. There's just no incentive to blow it up.
Well, remember you've heard it here first, folks.
I'm going on record here.
All right. Well, we'll see. Well, time will tell.
So I understand you've
Well,
been going back and forth to some interesting railroady sort of areas as part of your work.
yeah, we like to talk about what's around us, right, Mike? And it's just kind of easier and more comfortable and more quaint, I guess, to look at the short lines. And what they're doing, and we've talked a lot over the years about the Grafton and Upton and all the progress in renovating a moribund railroad that they've made, and it's still every time I ride past it, I'm still amazed at the fact that trains are running on those tracks.
You
If you had
remember
asked
when they
me,
weren't.
well, if you had asked me 10 years ago if that was ever going to happen, I'm sure I would have laughed.
Right.
Kind of the opposite end of that spectrum, but a short line nonetheless, is the Seaview Railroad, which is down in North Kingston, Rhode Island, and ostensibly handles the Quonset Point and Industrial Park, which was the old Quonset Point Naval Air Base. And it's all very, very large manufacturing companies, including several military contractors, and a couple of my clients are down there. So I'm down there at least once a week, and I've had an opportunity to see some of their equipment move around. We were kind of scratching our heads last month, wondering if those were SW-12s or what they were. And in fact, they are. But I've had an opportunity to see some trains run. But the amazing thing, Mike, is the amount. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of freight cars
Really?
in this facility, and a little bit of everything. There is
So, do they have a good sized yard?
they don't have a yard. They've got, several smaller yards. So
Okay.
the facility is broken down into a bunch of different areas that feed the manufacturers. So they've got staging tracks for covered hoppers. They've got a yard for car carriers. They've got a, and I don't know who the company is that is loading cars in there, but it's a major loading and unloading point for automobiles.
I think it's Subaru, isn't it?
I think it's Subaru too.
Yeah.
Might be Toyota. I'll have to look again more closely the next time I go in, but there are thousands of cars in that facility that are waiting to go someplace. And they're actually refurbishing some of the track at this point. General Dynamics Electric Boat Division, which is a they manufacture submarines, just got the contract to manufacture the newest iteration of sub that the Navy is going to be using, and they're building what's got to be $1 billion addition to handle this contract. And they'll be dealing with railroad car loads of material coming in. So it's and as the weather gets better, it's fun to ride through there and take a look at what they're doing. And of course they're also a locomotive repair facility. They do a lot of work for the commuter rail.
Yeah, MBTA is always sending extras down there with equipment, right?
Yeah. So,
I think
we
that's part of the whole positive train control installs. I think a lot of it's being done down there.
So there's always that equipment that's kicking around in there as well. So it's been interesting. If you've got to, be in your car for long periods of time, which,
We
every
know that
week.
doesn't faze you.
Well, as long as there's interesting things to see every once in a while. Then it's all good. But so that's been occupying my time, and we were talking about before we started recording about the ability to kind of rail fan in and around there, and I'm not sure a lot of the track borders the road, so that part of it obviously is free and open to the public. I don't know what the security would be like if you tried to pull into one of their parking lots, or
You probably wouldn't want to get anywhere near the auto facility, that's for sure.
I know there are some roads that I've gone down that you get to a point where there's a sign that says do not go beyond this point, no trespassing.
I remember I was rail fanning down in the Tampa area one time, and we drove down a road towards the port, and we got to, came around a corner and came to a spot where a couple of Humvees and soldiers with M16s, and I turned to my friend and I said, "I think we stop here."
Yeah, very much so. You don't want to even have to talk to those people.
Yeah, I think we gave them a wave, turned around, and drove off, which is
Understandably.
just what they wanted us to do, I think.
Yep. And speaking of driving off,
Speaking of time.
so our big announcement, and it's actually not your big announcement, it's my big announcement, is that this is my last podcast.
Big to me.
And well,
We've been doing this for how long?
well, so as part of the process of preparing to talk about this, I did some thinking and looking back, and I started this podcast 13 years ago last April. So figure, one a month. Let me get my calculator here. So 12 times 13, we're looking at,
A lot of shows.
looking at a lot of shows. So,
And I know you remember when I came on board. I know I don't.
yeah, so, just as a way of background for those who, don't know, how this all got started, this got started as a way to promote what was then called the Craftsman Structure Show, which was an idea developed by Doug Fiscali. And Doug, was just this great conceptual idea guy. He would think up the craziest things in a podcast. Model railroad podcast at the time was unheard of. And he and the other partner in the Craftsman Structure Show, Jimmy Degnan, were able to, work to figure out the technology of a podcast. And the three of us, got on Skype. I'm sure it was Skype at the time, and started talking. And what I realized really quickly was that they weren't talking. I think we recorded a 2.5 hour podcast, and I'm not sure they spoke for a total of 5 minutes each. So, and it wasn't for lack of contribution. It was, they're just shy. They were shy. They've since come out of their shells, but it was tough. So we talked about it afterwards, and we knew we needed a fourth. And I called Dave Frary, who was a friend of mine, and we'd worked together on a number of projects. And I said, "Hey, it's a way to promote what you do, and it's all good fun. And what do you think?" And he said, "Well, let me try it." And he came on the next month, and I think the four of us went for probably 4 years or so, recording podcasts. And we at some point we brought in I'll never forget the phone call. I pick up the phone one day, and this guy on the other end says, "Your podcast really sucks." And I said, "Excuse me?" And he said, "But I can help you." And I said, "Who the heck is this?" And he identified himself as Joe Duckworth. And Joe was a DJ in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and knew everything there was to know about radio broadcasting and podcast broadcasting, and had hosted his own hunting podcast for a number of years, and knew all about the technology, and knew what we were doing wrong, and knew how to fix it. And Joe was really the guy that kind of put it all together and made us sound better, and made us be professional, and edited the show for a few years, and just really did a great job with it. And during that time, I had met you, Mike, at the Railroad Prototype Modelers Meet down in Cocoa Beach. And
It's that Ray Schofield connection again.
right, and we shot the DV, the Weathering DVD, and within a few months after that, we had you on the podcast. And yeah, that's got to go back 7 years now.
Easy, yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's it, and along the way, we brought in Jimmy Simmons. And Jimmy's contributions to the show were epic, not only in terms of his knowledge of model railroading, which comes from his dad, who is my oldest daughter's godfather, but his own incredible creativity. Jimmy really broke some ground in terms of using a laser cutter. And that's just, I'm being quick about the description of what he's done and what he's added to the hobby, but it shouldn't be overlooked by any stretch of the imagination. And I can't, I'd be totally remiss if I didn't certainly point out in glowing detail your contributions, not only to the hobby, but to this podcast. You talked me into keeping this thing going a few years ago when it didn't really look like we could. We didn't have the manpower and the time to, to do a full podcast edit. And you thought it'd be a good idea to keep it going, but just, keep it rudimentary in terms of, how it was released. And we really streamlined the process, and I think for the past probably 3 years now, we've put out a pretty solid product every month. But 13 years is a long time to do anything, and I'm at a point in my life where, as my good friend Bob Leonard would say, I'm always trying to stuff 10 pounds of you know what into a 5 pound bag. So the reality of it is that, I've got a lot of things going in my life that I really love right now. I've got a new family and and still an old family and a demanding job, and obviously I'm still trying to get drafted by the major leagues of baseball. So
Well, when I asked you and you told me that even though you love trains, that you like baseball more, that's when I knew you were serious.
Well, and that's just part of it, right? The end of next month, I'll be getting married, and I'm incredibly fortunate to be marrying a wonderful young lady and her three incredible kids. And one of the things that I really enjoy doing, and I want to be able to spend more time doing, is being with them. So, as much as we love doing this, and the order of priorities, this is pretty low on the list. I've been kind of, pushing back from active participation in the hobby over the last couple of years, partly in preparation for this, but also, it just feels right now. I don't ever see a time when I'll not be a model railroader. Whether it's armchair or active, I've got a lot of friends in the hobby, and I'm not leaving the hobby. I'm just leaving the podcast, and based on our last conversation, it sounds like you're gonna continue on with it, and which you should if that's what you want to do, and if that's the case, then I'm sure our listeners will appreciate it. And obviously I can't thank our listeners enough. Over the years, we have been blessed with incredible response and feedback to this podcast from day one. And it gained me quite a bit of notoriety in the hobby. Some of it good, some of it not so good. But it's nice being a big fish in a small pond.
That's a good way to put it.
Back when Jimmy and Doug and Dave and I were doing this, we were tracking downloads, and at one point, after 3 or 4 years, we had surpassed over 1 million downloads. We were averaging 25,000 unique listeners every month, and it was exciting to think that that many people thought it was important enough to listen to what we were doing. And it was also, exciting and very gratifying to do all the traveling I was doing to conventions and shows, and meet lots and lots of people who were listening to the podcast. I want to thank all of them, and I'm sure, we know now the numbers aren't what they were, but it's still a pretty solid listening base.
What's interesting is when I do a clinic, I usually mention the podcast and ask for a show of hands for just to see if anybody there is also a listener. And I'm always surprised at the number of hands that go up. Now, maybe that's because it's an opportunity for them to see something in person that they sometimes listen to, or maybe we're just so entertaining that they just can't get enough of it. I'm not really sure which it is, but I do know that in terms of what my plans are with the podcast, I think what I'm going to do is I am going to take the summer, I think, and just kind of think through what should happen next, in terms of what the show format would be. I don't really I've never done anything on a longer term basis without Mr. Mason being involved, so we're in uncharted waters here, and I need to just take some time and think about what I want to achieve and also think a little bit about what people would want to hear. So One thing I would do, I think, would be I would like to encourage. You killed the show. You weren't kidding about leaving the show. We're still recording, by the way.
You can't make that stuff up. Yeah, I didn't mean to do that, but I just hung up on the call.
Boy, when you leave a podcast, you leave the podcast.
Yeah, no kidding. No
I'm
kidding.
not even sure how we're going to do this. There may be a way to join the two of them together. I really have never done that, but it might be time for me to learn.
Well, now you're going to learn it. By the way, you're on your own.
I guess so.
I'm sorry, you were saying about the future.
Yeah, whatever I was saying, God only knows. I'll have to go back and listen to it. No,
Yeah.
I think I was saying that anybody that is a listener or on the Facebook group or would like to send me an email, it's an easy email to remember, Mike Rose Hobbies, HOBBIES at Gmail. Just send me some thoughts. What you like, what you don't like, should we do it, should we not? And I'll take all of that into consideration.
Okay. And obviously I wish you the best of luck. Mike and I have been friends for a lot of years, and obviously that continues. I'm looking forward to listening from time to time and getting updates, and obviously we'll be talking. But again, folks, thank you as always for listening, and
What do you mean from
whatever,
time to time?
well, every month is what I meant to say.
That's more like it. Okay.
That's all I got tonight, Mike, and thank you very much for all that you've done for the show, and for me as well. So I look forward to seeing your progress with the layout.
Well, thank you for showing me how to do it. And I would say to our listeners, see you in the fall.
Take care, folks.